Todd Lee, how are you?
You stud. Look at your hair. You're looking good, man.
You like that, huh? Look at that.
Sexy.
You wish you had that hair, don't you?
I just can't do nothing.
Well, look at it this way. I may have hair, but you've got a log cabin you're in right now making me all jealous. Welcome to The Aggressive Life. Back in December of 2020, I hosted Legit Cowboy on the podcast. And today, we're going to have that Legit Cowboy back. Not just a Legit Cowboy, but a legit friend. That's what he's become in the last 4 years or so. He was a champion bareback rider, a horse whisperer, a great communicator. Little did I know, he would actually end up taking an important part in my life. So this guy, Todd Pierce is his name. He grew up in rural Idaho. He's always cared about the rodeo, especially the men and women who call it home. Then an injury sidelined his professional rodeo riding career. He discovered that his ability to connect with an audience and communicate deep spiritual truths, all while taming wild horses. I've seen this guy at least, let's see, Dirt, how long have we had him coming to our church?
I think
three times.
This will be the fourth time, I think.
The first time he came, I think we only had two services. We were recovering from COVID or something like that.
But it's grown every time.
There's a different horse every service, and he's taken a wild, unridden, unbroken, untamed horse. It's never had a saddle on, never had a human. Every time in under an hour, he's riding that horse, a legitimate horse whisperer.
It's crazy.
Oh my gosh. You know, at some point we're going to have to, I'll bring him on and we'll talk to him ourselves. But, you know, this is one of the things that I love. When I met Todd, where we actually had a relationship, but we'll go to the next level, when he invited me to go on an elk hunt. He got me a tag to hunt a female elk, which was like, great, awesome. Let's do that. Sounds great. So we went out, and I didn't really know that much about him. And then as we were hunting and talking one night, he told me what he did with this horse thing. And he doesn't like to use the term horse whisperer, but that's what he is. And he goes into prisons and stuff, taming these horses and giving the spiritual ramifications to it. And he's doing that. I'm going, wait, what? You do what? I said, well, we're going to have you at our church. I'm going to have you in the church. He goes, you know, they always say that. No one ever does it because, you know, they get into the legal liabilities and what happens if a horse jumps out of the ring and this. And I said, yeah, that's true, but we will. So I came back and I told Season, our CFO, and some others. I said, look, we're doing this. You can figure out if you're going to tell insurance or don't tell insurance. Doesn't matter to me, but do not tell me we're not doing this. And he's done this and it's been great, and people bawl and weep like babies. It's fantastic. So he's going to be in Cincinnati May 2nd to 5th. Six different opportunities if you're anywhere in the tri-state region, or you can see it online because we have a thriving digital community at crossroads.net. I'm saying this ahead of time, not because this is a church podcast right here, but I'm telling you right now, you're gonna go, oh, I need to see that, because my friend here has got good stuff to share with us. So let's get to him. Welcome to The Aggressive Life, Todd Pierce.
Yes, sir.
Boy, long, long way we've traveled since last time we had our first awkward podcast conversation, wasn't it?
Yeah, you've gotten better.
Well, I could only get better.
No, I have come a long way since we first met, just in, a whole lot of different levels. But I really appreciate you taking such an active role in my life and trusting me with so much access to your church family there and your podcast. So super grateful for you.
Well, thank you. I only do it because I'm trying to squeeze every bit of talent from you that I can. So don't think I'm being very loving. I'm using you is what I'm doing. I'm using you and your giftedness and your sexiness to drive up listenership. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, no, that ain't true. There's only so much you can fake that.
Not true. You do wish you have my long hair, don't you? You do wish that.
It's curly and wavy, and you're looking really good, Brian.
You want to run your fingers through it, your cowboy fingers through it, dude?
Yeah, let me have a touch of that. You got product in that hair?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If I didn't have product in this hair, I'd look like Einstein, just go all over the place. But which this is part of the reason why I have not I would look like Einstein, Dirt. Don't laugh over that. I would not sound like Einstein or think like Einstein. I would look like him. Would you stop being condescending over there in your dirty little corner? Sheesh. But it's one of the reasons I've always had short hair like you have. It's just easy. You get up and go. And fortunately for this, for me, that's the only thing I've got to do. I've got to, instead of just get up and go, I got to put a little water on it and then rub some product in and go. I'm not blow drying or anything like that. So it adds about 90 seconds to my morning routine, which is still 90 seconds more than I'd like to. At some point, that's going to get old. And I'm gonna go back to number two buzz cut at Grey Clips.
Yeah. Well, you still have to include in your morning schedule doing your hair, and that just is embarrassing.
Right. Right. Oh, that is the truth. So you, one of my favorite stories to tell about you too. I met with my group of guys I meet together with every week, and we meet together at 7 o'clock. And one of my favorite meetings I ever had was when you came to Crossroads first to do the horse thing. You came in early. And I'm not sure why you came in as early as you did. Oh, I know. You came in to pre-check out the stage to make sure it could hold the weight of all that stuff. So you came in early and you stayed with us. And I took my men's group. And one of my favorite men's group ever was when I just said, well, just tell us what you do. And you launched into this horse equals us teaching. You launched into this, what the horse trainer is what God is, soliloquy that was utterly mesmerizing. And I didn't even know. I'm like, gosh, I didn't even know that this stuff was existed. I thought it was just bringing you into, you know, break a horse and have the wow factor. I knew you did some teaching, but I didn't know it was this deep. So let's go back there. Okay. Just tell us a bit about your spiritual journey and how horses relate to your spiritual journey.
Well, Brian, a lot of people, I think they just assume that I came up with an idea and that this is just like another dog and pony show and a clever way of communicating. And maybe all that stuff is even true. But the reality of it is I didn't come up with this, and I'm not coming up with things. This has actually just been my journey. And so I can't separate the two as far as me learning to walk with Jesus and be one of God's sons and my interaction with horses. They're synonymous. When I decided I wanted to follow Jesus, there wasn't any men that I saw that were following Jesus that I wanted to follow. To cut to the short of it, is that I couldn't read well enough that I could learn anything from the Bible. And I didn't trust people enough that I was going to be able to go to a church and learn anything. It was in my interactions with horses that all this visual became my reality. And it wasn't an audible voice, but it might as well have been, because I was speaking words that I think were coming from God to a horse that were just being reflected right back to me. And so from the first day that began, where the clearest revelations that I was getting spiritually were coming through my interactions with the horse, and everything I was saying to the horse was exactly what Holy Spirit was saying back to me. And so it's a sacred, very personal thing that I do. Although we can do them one after another, it never feels like that to me, because it's still just my life, and people get to eavesdrop on that conversation that I'm having.
What do you think the connection is between us and horses? Why are we so fascinated by them? And I'm talking about people who are city slickers like myself, who are rarely around them. It just seems like people melt when they're around a horse. Why?
They're so emotional, horses are, and they're powerful, that it's almost like in an animal form, a vision of what it is that we wish we could be. And the beauty of them is that they'll let you be that because you can become one with them and your strength is exponentially greater. And the emotional connection, the maybe even a spiritual connection that can take place, that we long for something great like that. And so I just think unless you're afraid of them, it's hard to be around a horse and not be attracted to them. And some people are dog people and cat people and whatever, but I think everybody, there's just something about our nature and what we were created to do that longs to be more powerful and faster and able to do the things that we see in partnership with horses.
And now that I know this, because you told me, they are the animal that we have the longest running relationship with. We domesticated them and leaned into them before we did dogs.
Yeah, we don't have history without horses. And they're just into the most ancient stories that we have is that man and horse, what I would say, starting from the beginning, I think it was just fun. And I think Adam and Eve rode horses because they could and because it was fun. Of course, I can make this stuff up because you're letting me talk, but I literally think horses were made to be with people.
Well, it is profound what you can do when you're with a horse.
Yeah. It makes a man 100 times stronger, that's for sure. And what you're able to accomplish is in some ways immeasurable because of the increase. And that's why armies and civilizations have always been noted. You know, their power was connected to how many horses they had. And that was just a sign of strength and power. And of course, that's been misused. But still, horses are just that one animal that represents something that's timeless.
Well, speaking of misused, every year we get the animal rights folks who getting up inside of our underwear telling us we're, you know, abusing horses and animals and God's creation. And if they're not picketing us, they're certainly finding out about it after the fact and just pelting us with on social media and emails, all that stuff. Are you hurting horses? Are we hurting horses here? What's happening here?
If I was hurting horses, I'd be ashamed of myself. And so, no, we're not hurting horses. But I understand, because I've been around this long enough, the industry, that the people that really do care about animals, they have a legitimate concern because maybe their experience has taught them something that just really isn't ultimately true. If you actually think that a horse is better off without being trained, then you probably just are not fully educated. You don't know what life is like for a horse that's truly wild, meaning that they're living out in the wild. They're not on a ranch, or the quality of life for a horse that doesn't actually get trained. And so, because you've probably seen, you know, the animal rights people are seeing the abuse side of it, and it's almost like saying that a child's better off not being with a family, because families can be abusive. It's better off for the state to have them and to be in the foster care system. Like, that just doesn't, it's that disconjointed to me to try to connect the two, to say that we're doing something that would be hurtful to a horse. These animals are being loved, and that's why you get to see the response that you get to see on stage. If they felt scared, they act quite differently. It's just like people. We're never our best when we're scared.
Well, the truth is you're actually helping the horse. This is one of the most compelling things that you said. And you say every year, I have to keep reminding you to say this because it becomes so second nature to you while transforming the rest of us. And that is that the strongest horse is a broken horse, or your phrase is, you don't like being a horse is broken, but a horse is freed, horse is trained, because horses that have been trained to ride with a master ride faster and live longer than a horse that's just on its own.
Yeah, you're actually saving their life. They may be able to stay alive, but their life is going to suck, and it's going to be brutal, and they're going to be exposed to disease and just malnutrition. And it's a brutal life for an animal to live as a wild animal. And it doesn't take out the fact that some animals are just built to be wild. Horses just don't happen to be one of them.
Hmm.
The American Mustang was an actual breed of horses. And so when people think about wild horses nowadays, they've been crossbred with domesticated horses, and they're just not, you know, it's rare to find a full purebred Mustang. And now most of those Mustangs are living in holding pens because the government doesn't know what to do with them. The animal rights people don't want them killed, and there's an overpopulation of them. And, life is horrible for a wild horse. And so in so many ways, we're rescuing their lives. And of course, there's people that don't take good care of their animals. There's people that don't take good care of their kids. But we can't just dissolve the idea of family relationships just because some people don't do it well. And for us to just say that horses shouldn't be trained, would be ultimately, to me, saying the exact same thing, because these animals have got so much in them that they don't even know they're capable of doing.
So a Mustang was originally an indigenous horse that lived on its own, and they can still do that, but we're gathering them up because they're trouncing people's property? Or what's the whole thing with wild Mustangs? I saw a documentary on how the government was letting people train them for free or something like that. So give us the primer on it.
Man, that'd be a big conversation, but I can say this, that it's not a government conspiracy. It's just not talked about much. That the ranchers have got enough weight on the fact that they own the land and these animals are tearing their fences up and eating all of their pasture, and that there's too many of them. So every year they round these things up with helicopters and put them in holding pens, and they're there for forever till they die. And it's costing, you know, millions upon millions of dollars to hold these animals. And yes, they adopt them out for free if it's going to go to a good home, and they're going to keep them for a certain amount of time, that there is a way that these animals, they're trying to get these animals in the hands of people. But in a lot of ways, they're not, you know, they're not the right horse for what people are looking for. They're great mountain horses, most of them, but these aren't the most athletic, agile. So wild horses are really, there's just a surplus of them, I guess is a way to put it. And it's a big problem. It's a really expensive problem. And people that are trying to look out for, or they say they're looking out for the best interest of the horse, really what they've condemned them to is a life in prison and in these holding yards, just to keep them off the land. And we feed them hay. And the taxpayers pay for it.
Until they die. Life in prison until you die.
Mm-hmm.
Then the alternative is they just destroy the land of the ranchers who are trying to feed America with their products, or you just capital punishment, you just kill them instantly.
Yeah, but jeez. I do think that we've consumed enough of the land in America that we need to figure out how to manage wildlife. And if we're going to put horses in the wildlife spectrum, then it'd be a hunted animal just like every other animal. And I'd sure hate to see that be the case, but there is a way to manage it. I don't have the answers. Otherwise they'd probably have asked me my opinion. But, the point that you're making is that a horse that's got an owner and they're being cared for and taken care of, they're better off, period. And then once you train them, they discover that they're capable of doing things that just their instincts alone wouldn't have taught them. The herd that they run in wouldn't have taught them how to do the things that a man can teach them to do.
I think we hold on to these metaphors that are not helpful nor healthy. We've talked a good bunch of times on The Aggressive Life about the metaphor of the lone wolf that people like to actually say themselves, I'm a lone wolf, which I always respond to. Well, it means you're small and you're going to die early. That's what you're saying. That's what lone wolves are. We also use a metaphor of a wild stallion. And again, that's a sad thing when you're out fending for yourself and you're not going to be as healthy as if you're being cared for on a ranch. And It's pretty interesting to me the parallels there are that come up with the horses and us, and I'm just really thankful that you get to tease that out live and in front of people. It's a thrill.
Yeah, I think we romanticize things, and it's kind of what happens when people lose their hope. They need to make something that they don't have sound more romantic than it actually is.
Well, and you have a message. All the horses I've seen you do, there's no two horses they're the same. And people get really paranoid, cynical about big churches. They think we've always got some agenda or there's some sleight of hand or something like that. And everyone assumes, well, it's the same horse, all services, or it was a setup. It was a previously trained horse. It's a horse that's actually trained to look wild. And he's not actually doing that. And I just, people just got to stop with your conspiracy theories. There's no conspiracy around mega churches and entertainment. Sorry, there isn't. I tell people all the time, Todd intentionally, he never looks at any of the horses before they come in the ring. The first time he ever sees them is when they come into a ring. We get the horses, or he works with somebody else who gets the horses. And every time there's something new that causes people, specifically me, to boo-hoo. Like one of the ones you've done, find a horse that has trauma, which I know we have a lot of our listeners who've had trauma. So walk us through that just as one example. This is some of the stuff that you end up sharing with a horse on stage in front of people. What do you do when a horse is in trauma, and how does that relate to us?
They've had an experience prior to the one that we're currently in that is impacting how we're interacting with each other. Like they've had a bad experience, and that bad experience taught them something, and they believe that to be true. And so if a horse is reacting in a fearful way to me or an aggressive way towards me, they're actually trying to physically hurt me. That's not all just instinct, because the way I can conduct myself with a horse is that it's pretty easy to establish that I'm a leader and I can cause movement. Like I can get them to move away from me. The trauma side of it comes in when fear is distracting them from focusing on me. And the whole goal of it is to get them to focus on me, because I'm going to teach them beautiful things. But when trauma kicks in, they buck, or they bite, or they kick, or they might actually just, it's not just fight or flight. Sometimes it's like they freeze. They get stuck and they won't even move. And so trauma teaches us something. And I think that like the beauty of it is that the only way a lie can have power over you is if you choose to believe the lie. And so many of us have been lied to throughout life, where something has happened and we've taken away the incident that happened to us isn't really what was the most powerful thing. The most powerful thing now is, what did we believe about what happened? And so there's certain takeaways that we come out of a situation with. And that takeaway is that you can't trust. Or that if you get in the situation that you better run, or you better protect yourself. And so we've partnered with lies because maybe in a certain situation that was actually true. It was unhealthy for you to be in that situation. You had to fight for yourself, or someone didn't protect you that should have. And so we've all got these things in our life where I think this is the kindness of God to represent to us, I'll let you have your moment here, but at the end of the day, can we have a conversation? And let me show you something that's more true than that. That was horrible. I'm sorry that happened. We're not going to make that pain less than what it actually is, but let's finish having the conversation, because if we still have fear, we haven't carried this out to a full conclusion, because that is the goal of heaven. Is for every one of us to be so convinced of the truth of what love communicates that fear doesn't continue get to lie to us. Horses are filled with trauma when they come to me. They've had a lot of experiences that have taught them a lot of things in that time, and I'm having to have enough compassion for them to realize that, hey, they didn't get to come in here with a clean slate. There's been issues that they've been through a lot. And when I look, and it's just a beautiful thing because I do that habitually with people. I just assume everybody I meet, I know that they've been through a lot and I don't really know them. And it's seldom that we get to know somebody well enough that we know enough of their story that we really can have some compassion and some empathy for them.
Yes, but what you do is you find the pain point and you press into the pain. Like the one with the shoulder and you were finding it and you're intentionally putting your hand there and pushing into the pain point, or at least the pain memory that the horse had. And you made the point of this is what God does with us. He finds that tender area and he starts pressing into it, because if we can work through that with him and trust him, then he has us. And everyone's crying the whole building as soon as you do that.
Yeah. Well, and it's really moving to me too, because I just look at before God actually attempted to fix all the things that were broken in me, the kindest thing that God could have done for me is to help me trust like him, period. Like if I don't feel safe and loved as a son of God, I'm really grateful that he didn't just come in and start showing me everything that was wrong with me and everything that I'm afraid of. And so my first goal with the horse is to establish the fact that I'm here to help. And this area, I can see that you don't trust me with that area. You know, if that this area of your life is still really scary for you. A lot of horses have a hard time having their ears touched. They've got a really good reason for it. And I don't want to just focus on his ears and make it to where now all I'm doing is focusing on everything that's wrong with them. There's a back and forth communication going on where I'm like, I'm safe. I love you. I'm powerful. I'm going to bring healing to you. Hey, can we talk about this area of your life? Because I know it's a really tender spot and you don't want to talk about it. You just soon pretend like it wasn't there, but I'm going to have to go to that spot. Because if you live your life like this, you're always going to have to live in reaction to the things that are going on around you. And, you know, I would hate that for any human, and I'd hate that for the horses. They just don't have to live trapped by the pain that they came out of.
You say that a good bit of times, that you're more powerful than the horse. The horse has to learn that I'm more powerful than him. Yet you got done saying at the beginning of our time that the horse is more powerful than us and we can do more when we have that muscle mass and that strength. So what do you mean when you say that we're more powerful than the horse?
Well, I could get in trouble saying this, but you can edit it out if this ain't going to work, but it's like,
oh, you're going to use a 4-letter word here?
No, I'm going to say that men are powerful than women in the same way.
Cut that dirt. Cut it.
No controversy.
All right, let's close in prayer right now.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Say it. Go ahead. You could say it and give you time to defend your thesis.
Okay. Just physically, if you want to take all the men and all the women in the world or take a million of them, you're going to find that men have been given physically more strength and can physically outperform a woman. That's why men's sports are what they are. And I can't believe this is actually a conversation anymore or still, but men are typically stronger physically than women.
Caitlin scored more points than Pistol Pete. What is hard to understand about that, Todd?
I don't know who those people are. I'm not in the circle.
You don't? Pistol Pete Maravich, all-time leading scorer forever and ever. And amazing guy, Pistol Pete Maravich. And then, NCAA record forever. And Caitlin, I forget her last name.
Clark.
Caitlin Clark broke his record. And I'm like, okay, she did. She had more hoops than him, yes. But are you guys trying to say she's better than Pistol Pete? Okay, anyway, go ahead. Keep going.
I don't follow sports, so that's why I wouldn't know that. But yeah,
more powerful.
The point is that the men are stronger than women physically. So if I wanted to just, if we're going to have a fight and physically combat each other, men would probably beat women. Unless women got to use all of their strengths and all of their gifts and we could make those things equal. So when I say I'm more powerful than the horse, I'm not saying I'm physically more powerful. I'm more powerful than the horse in the sense that their brute strength isn't in the end going to win, because I could use weapons, I could use ropes, I could use whips, I could overpower the horse. And in a horse's world, that's really the only thing that matters is who's the strongest. Mm. What is crazy about my interactions with them is they're stronger than me. They're more powerful than me. But in an overall sense, they realize that when I walk into the ring with them, it's not just that I'm a man. It's that I carry something that they're very in tune to. Like, they're not just emotional. They pick up on things. And this is the thing I would say that I love the most about horses is that you can't lie to them. Mm-hmm. And so when the Bible says you can't hide what's in your heart, that's what's beautiful. I can hide it from people usually. Like, I'm pretty good at making people think one thing of me when I'm not. And, you know, that's manipulative. And it's not a good thing. But the horse is always going to call me out. But they know that I am more powerful in the sense that I've been given dominance over them. Mm-hmm. And I can cause them to move. And if we were going to have a fist fight, I've had lots of them with them and I lose every time, but that's not the end of the story. I'll find a way to show them that I have a strength, but my strength is going to be presented to them through kindness.
So your male-female illustration, you're saying intentionally breaks down, whereas 9 out of 10 men are going to beat a woman in an arm wrestling competition or a street fight. So in that sense, they're more powerful. But then you said the totality of a woman, totality of a person doesn't necessarily mean that they're more powerful because you're able to use your creativity, your wits, all that stuff.
And yeah, no, we'd have to finish the conversation because I would say that in our marriage, my wife is, I'm supposed to be the leader of the house, yet I can see the strengths that my wife carries in so many ways. She's more powerful than I am. And so that's why I love the idea of what it looks like to co-lead, and this would be a whole other conversation. But I'm stronger than my wife, and she's more fit than I am. But I could beat her up if I decided to. But when it comes down to it, power is something that's including way more elements than what we're talking about. Right. And my wife wants me to be physically strong, that because it serves her well. I take care of her, and her strengths make it to where she's able to think really rationally about things that I don't think clearly about. And so all of her intellect and her the way she's just got these senses super clear about what Holy Spirit's saying, that I rely on her strengths the same way she relies on mine, and it doesn't have to be a power conversation. So with a horse, that's what the challenge is that nature has taught them that it's going to be survival of the fittest. And when people act like animals, that's what we end up doing, is having these power conversations, which one of us is more powerful. And the reality is God's the only one that's more powerful. And we're supposed to be able to learn how to we become powerful by yielding our strength to each other. And so a horse has never experienced someone that ultimately has authority over them or power over them, but they're not using their power to dominate them. And that's what the horse is having to reckon with, is all of their instincts and all their experiences is there's only one powerful one in the herd. There's one guy in charge, and everybody else lives under his tyranny. And that's not the kingdom of Jesus. And so why I get to see the results I get to see with a horse, one is they're confused by this whole leadership thing. They find themselves wanting to be led by me, but I'm not taking their strength from them and I'm not abusing them to get it. They've never had that conversation before. They've never been around the presence of someone that could hurt them and chooses not to, but uses their strength to help them feel safe. And that's what, if you're going to say, what's the magic? That's the magic, and it's because that's how Jesus led. He could have done whatever he wanted to people around him. And he chose to demonstrate his power by the amount of compassion and love that he had for the people that he was leading.
Yeah, that's excellent. Hey, you! Yes, you! Listening to the Aggressive Life podcast right now. We need your help to take this show to the next level. One of the ways that you can do that is by leaving a rating and review. Whether it's Apple, Spotify, or YouTube, your ratings and reviews go a long way in putting the show in front of new people. So to say thanks, we have something just for you. That would be to say thanks for you actually leaving a review. You can do that and then shoot an email to Dirt with your mailing address and we'll send you a postcard and Aggressive Life sticker. It's all honor system, so leave those reviews, shoot that email, and you'll get something sweet in your mailbox. Let us know at dirt@briantome.com. That's your real
email. That's my new email address.
Oh, my gosh. That is awesome. dirt@briantome.com. Let's get on with the show. You've done, how many horses have you done since I saw you last? That's a year's time.
Probably 40.
40, okay. Which of the horses are most memorable to you of those 40? Finish this sentence. Oh, man, Brian, you should have seen. We had this one horse who
was supposed to be borderline maybe too gentle, but they had to haul him through L.A. traffic to get him to the event. And he showed up after being in the trailer for 5 hours through LA traffic. And this, I was dealing with road rage, really, is what I was doing. By the time this horse got there, they put him in the pen and I could see that he was extremely upset. And he wasn't mistreated or anything. It's just the noise and the stopping and going. And so he got to this event late. And so we didn't have a bunch of time to let him settle down. And I got in the pen with him, and he came at me. Well, he's trying to kill me, is what he's trying to do. But he kicked me several times. I happen to have a couple of my sons there with me. And one of the times he kicked, he didn't actually make contact, but everybody thought that he did because he kicked so close that the sand came off the bottom of his feet and shot in both my eyes. So that not only am I in this pen with this horse trying to kick my head off, but now I can't see a thing. And so I'm blind. And my son jumped the fence and came in there with a water bottle. And they kept the horse away from me long enough to wash my eyes out in the middle of the ring. And we went back to it. And I'm bleeding, you know, because I ended up having to be stitched up later. But, you know, it started off as like this violent, you know, they're trying to decide if they should just cancel, you know, I could see the guys that were in charge. They're all running around trying to figure out somebody stop this, you know, this is out of hand, but really it was just understanding where the horse was at. He was just frustrated. And when they get angry and when they get frustrated, they're just bigger than me, they're stronger and they can hurt me. And so it was a super unique setting. So, yeah, you should have seen that one.
Well, now I know. I'm going to make sure we have all the horses at all services drive for hours in traffic. I know how to get some drama. Because sometimes I'm like, all right, Todd had to pay somebody to give this horse some lewds. Way too mellow. That's what I need. I need some drama. So let's work on that, Dirt.
Got it.
And that horse right there, did you actually get to ride it by the end of the time?
Oh yeah. It was, unfortunately we didn't have a single video camera there. But it was a men's event and we got to talk about a whole bunch of stuff. You know, this horse gave us so many talking points. And by the end of it, I wasn't just riding him. We were loping circles both directions. Once you exercise that level of aggression and the guy won't quit, his level of surrender was proportionate to that. Wow. He finally turned to me like, oh my gosh, whatever you have, I want. And I'm just going to do what you say. So show me what to do. And that level of compliance comes to in certain degrees with every horse you've watched, but because it wasn't such a radical shift. It's almost like, I think that's why my experience with Jesus was so radical, is because I was so messed up, and that once I realized that he wasn't going to punish me for my, my behavior, I was just like, well, if I hated you to this degree and I still, and you still chose to love me, sign me up. I'm in.
That's really a good observation, that when the horse sees your resiliency and stick-to-itiveness, they're kind of in awe of it.
Yeah.
I think I'm like that with God.
Yeah.
I just keep assuming that, you know, I do my latest stupid thing and he's done with me. You know, I've rejected him, I've served myself, I've done whatever, and he's got to be so done with me. He's just so done with me. I mean, I can't hurt him by kicking him in the face like a horse does you. It's just not possible to hurt God physically. But I do think that I keep chasing him away, and he just doesn't chase, does he?
No, it's like I don't. To those that have been forgiven much, love much. Is, you know, like, I mean, it's actually scriptural that you can run and you can misbehave all you want. You can do what you want. But this God that we speak of isn't mad at you over it. Like, he gets it. You just don't have to keep doing it that way. And I think if there's a reason why I continue to expose myself to the danger and the challenges of doing this, it's so worth it, Brian.
Yes.
The world has got to know this truth that Jesus wasn't just a religious figurehead, and he created a way for us to do things that's different than the ways that we've been taught by the world or even our own families. And when we put our trust in him in the level where this is actually going to change the way I do life and how I interact with people, my value systems, all of these things are being modeled after the kingdom that Jesus showed us about, then this is when I think things get really exciting, because the world has gone so far that we're primed for a revival. And I know that that's what you want. And I see at Crossroads that everything that's done there is done with such excellence, and your reach is so large that it's because we're modeling to the world, there is a different way to do things. We're not playing games. We're not playing church. We're talking about a king and his kingdom, and it's going to last forever. And there's a way to do it. And we're going to do that the best way we know how, aggressively.
Right. One of my favorite memories of the horses that you've had was this horse came in, and it was a good-looking horse, like really well-cared-for horse, and had never been ridden before. And I talked to the guy who brought it in for us, and I said, that horse was just, it was strange. It was really odd, that horse, and it was really odd how good-looking it looked. And I wouldn't have expected a horse to be as old as that was, not ridden, and still be taken care of. It's a weird thing. I said, yeah, well, the story with that one was that horse was an owner's horse who had gotten a stroke. And when he got a stroke, he couldn't care for the horse. He couldn't train the horse. And so the owners, who had a debilitating stroke, family came in to help him run the farm, help him run the house and all that stuff. And they just, they couldn't afford the extra time to deal with the horse. And they're all dealing with the trauma of a father who's had a stroke, and he might have even died, I think. I don't remember that. But he said, so the horses do really well at picking up trauma. That's why there's such a thing as equine therapy. And this horse has just been traumatized because of soaking in the emotional sadness of all the family coming around. And he hasn't been abused in terms of someone beating him. He's been fed well, but just not cared for at all. No time for him, because everyone's in deep moping, and he picks that up. And I thought, gosh, that's again, like a lot of us, we we were just sucking up the trauma or the perceived trauma. I think we overused the word trauma, by the way, too. I think that, no, some people just had a bit of a hard life. Doesn't mean it's trauma. Mm-hmm. People have had a bad month. They had a shitty month. Doesn't mean it's trauma, you know? I think we're overusing that word a bit. But nonetheless, however people are feeling, we soak that in and it starts to affect our mood, starts to take us down because we feel like we've got to carry all that. Someone asked me recently, hey, why did you name Kyle lead pastor Crossroads? He reports to me. I don't know. We made that change. I don't know if you knew that. I'm still a senior pastor, but I named Kyle Ranson to be the lead pastor. I created a new thing, lead pastor. He reports to me, but to deal with a lot of the day-to-day creativity and pushing forward of the kind of standard ministries of Crossroads, the weekend services and all that stuff. So I'm still engaged. I'm around. I'm not like a founding pastor, pastor emeritus who's out. My office hours look the same. I'm still in the same amount. I'm working hard, but I'm freeing up myself to creatively dream about other things and pour myself into other things, kind of along that awakening revival thing we were talking about before. But yeah. Someone said, why Kyle? And I said, well, one of the reasons, well, we have some other people who very similar gifting, but I think one of the things that Kyle brings is he lets things roll off his back. He doesn't get traumatized easily. He doesn't carry stress. But some people feel like when you have stress, you have to be stressed. Or when there's sadness, then you have to be sad. Now you can acknowledge that things are sad, but you don't have to carry it. You know, it's not your pain. It's not your trauma. I mean, you can minister to a person, love a person, hug them through it, give them some tender words and stuff, care for them, pray for them, but you don't have to own it. You don't have to let it. It's okay to be okay. It's actually okay to be happy. And a lot of people don't understand that. But that horse was kind of carrying that, and you walked it through really well.
Well, we're going to reflect whatever we're the most aware of. And that's why me getting the horse's attention becomes a beautiful model to how is it that we're going to interact with Holy Spirit. And if we're the ones that carry Holy Spirit, then it's whatever we're most aware of, that's going to be our reality. And so, yeah, for a horse, that's why they'll run through fire. They will do things that they would have ran away from initially because they're more aware of me than they are of their surroundings. And you can watch, especially at Crossroads, because there's so many video screens and sound and people, there's a ton of distractions. The reason the horse becomes so courageous is because it's more aware of me than it is its surroundings. And so if we're going to live in a traumatized world, in a world that is on hyper speed, the only way we actually can have the resilience is to be aware of the presence that we're carrying. And that becomes the paradigm shift where if you've got a guy that can do that, one, he probably has a skill set and a gifting connected to that, but he's more aware of this deep, profound truth that he carries the same spirit that rose Jesus from the dead. And that's what he's focused on. And that's why we can do supernatural things is that the world around us isn't what's bossing us anymore. And when we get triggered and there's some trauma that comes up, there's some past event that is still, provoked an emotion inside us. We can spend our whole life in therapy or we can just change what it is that we're aware of. And I'm not against therapy. I'm 100% for it. But I do think that, like you said, sometimes we're hyper aware of, or we call trauma what it really isn't. It's just a bad day. But regardless, whether it truly is trauma or it is just had a bad moment, whatever we're aware of, that's going to be what's going to be dictating our emotions and our behavior.
And we can choose to be aware of that there's a God who loves us and cares for us, and we're still around. And that trauma didn't take us down because he cares. I can be aware of that. I need to be aware of that more than I'm aware of the thing. And eventually, the thing needs to stop being the narrative. Just like move on. Figure it out. There's a lot of people who just don't want to move on. You know, like the horses you're dealing with, you've dealt with, they really do want to move on. Yeah, I meet a lot of people who really don't want to move on. Like Jesus says to one person one time, to the pools of Bethesda, he says to him, says to her, do you want to be well? I think if Jesus asked a lot of people in churches, do you want to be well? We would be very offended by that. Like, what do you mean? Of course I do. Of course. I'm not sure. I think that this is a narrative about your life that you've grown comfortable with, and you're not sure who you are without that pain and trauma. And that's why you keep holding on to it instead of moving on. You can move on. I mean, that sounds very offensive to a lot of people. You may not be able to move on today, but you can move on. You should expect yourself to move on. And if you're not seeing any traction or any progress in your issues or your pain or your memories, it's because you're not aware of the thing that's the most important, and that is there's a God who redeems, who restores. And we've got to believe that and operate that way instead of just clinging to our past.
I agree.
Well, hey, listen, if you want to follow up more with Todd, Todd, how do they follow up with you? Where do they find you? Just give your advertising, website, social media, whatever.
Yeah, writinghighministries.org or .org. Todd Pierce, Google it.
So, man, I know there's something here that Todd and I talked about probably has your number on. Maybe it's the trauma conversation. Maybe it's the trusting a power that's more powerful, a person who's more powerful than you. Maybe it's using all your faculties instead of just your muscles, whether they're well-developed or not. I don't know what it is, but I think there's something here for all of us to learn. It's really, really good. Todd is coming to the tri-state area, and we call it the tri-state, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania. You can come in from wherever, come into that area. He's going to be having a different wild horse every time on May 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th. May 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th at Crossroads Oakley. We thought about having one of our other campuses or additional campuses in Ohio and in Kentucky. But as we looked at the staging needs and all that stuff, like, nah, the Oakley stage of 3,500 seats and two balconies and able to hold a whole horse. There's a lot of design requirements. So we're going to have it then, and it'll also be streamed at all of our sites on Sunday. This is not a church podcast. This isn't a pastor podcast, but I know there's people who listen to this and go, oh, I'd like to do that. So yeah, maybe you want to do the horse thing. Watch Todd at crossroads.net or actually make a road trip. Come in, watch the Cincinnati Reds. Whatever it is, go to the link in the description. You find all the descriptions, locations, videos from the past. We'll look at stuff from the past. It's all right there for you. Anything we can do to help you. This isn't about advertising an event. This is about giving you stimuli that helps you be more aggressive. That's why we exist. See you next time on The Aggressive Life. Thanks for joining us on this journey toward aggressive living. Find more resources, articles, past episodes, and live events over at briantome.com. My new books, a repackaged edition of The 5 Marks of a Man, and a brand new 5 Marks of a Man tactical guide are open right now on Amazon. If you haven't yet, leave this podcast a rating and review. It really helps get the show in front of new listeners. And if you want to connect, find me on Instagram at Brian Tome. The Aggressive Life is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio.